Good evening.
Good evening.
Tonight, we will continue our exploration of the Buddhist precepts. We started last week and did the first two. And tonight we'll take a look at the 3, 4, and 5 precepts. The 10 precepts in the Buddhism are not just a list of formalized ethics. The precepts are not something you type out and put on your refrigerator with a magnet so that it reminds you every day how you should behave, and not like a bumper sticker, put out a message. Precepts are much more alive than that, than some kind of list or preaching or admonitions. The Buddhist ethics are ethics of intent. Intent. You know, we as individuals have to embrace the precepts if they are to have any meaning for us at all, more than just a list. So in Buddhism, we use the term volition. You think about it. You put your mind to it. Put your mind to the ethics. So precepts come about because of volition. And that means that the actions that we perform in our life are the result of what we have been carrying around in our mind. So the things we do, the actions that we do, are neither good nor bad by themselves. Some action may result in a great big benefit to people, and they will be grateful to you. Or sometimes the actions we do may cause harm. But the actions themselves are neutral. It's our intention when we carry them out that determines their morality. Our intention means to know what direction we want our life to take. So the precepts, when we follow the precepts, they are an expression of the direction of the life we have chosen. Not chosen casually, but carefully considered. We choose a life to go in a certain direction, and the precepts support that direction of intention. So the precepts, all of the precepts, are based on a particular fundamental Buddhist principle. That when you read Buddhist literature or Zen literature, you come across the term cause and effect. Cause and effect. It means that, in Buddhism, it means that the situation you're in now, or what's happening to you right now, or some action going on right now, is the result of some past action. Past action being the cause, and what's taking place today is the effect. And everything that we do in life is the result of what is called causes and conditions. So the qualities that are associated with the cause later show up in the effect. Our intention and our attitude at some point will determine the effect of the actions that we take. So this is a fundamental principle of Buddhism. In other words, nothing happens by accident. So in Buddhism, you know, the precepts are felt to be the guidelines or the signposts of a moral life, an ethical life. And to live a moral life, we have to be skilled. We have to have a certain kind of skill. Not the kind that you apply on the job in Silicon Valley. Different kind of skill. So to be immoral means to be unskilled. And to be immoral and unskilled means to lead an unwholesome life. When we lack the skill needed for a moral life, the precepts don't make any sense. But when we exercise our skill that leads to morality, then the precepts come to life. The so-called immoral acts come from some roots in Buddhism. There are roots, unwholesome roots. Immoral acts come from three unwholesome roots. And they are known as the three poisons. Greed, hatred, and delusion. Desire and anger and delusion. Greed being another way of talking about desire, and hatred and anger, same thing. And when we talk about delusion, it happens in a couple of ways. One is we fool ourselves. We fool ourselves about the truth of things because we think it would be to our advantage to fool ourselves. We get something out of it by making believe this isn't true, that the truth is something else. It's like a rationalization. It's like saying guns don't kill people. Of course they do. But some people like to say no. That's one example of a delusion. We fool ourselves by rationalizing the truth. And also, delusion means we can be fooled by appearance. We can be fooled by appearance of things. And when we are fooled by the appearance of things, it's as if we are not awake. We don't see clearly, we are not awake. That's where the immoral acts come from. Whereas moral acts come from the opposite mental state, the opposite emotional state. That is, a mind free of attachments and emotions. So the precepts or admonitions about how to behave, they kind of point backwards. When you think about cause and effect, the precepts point to the causes. The precepts say, first purify your mind and heart. Before you worry about don't do this or don't do this or don't do this, first go back and purify your mind and heart. Then there will be no harmful acts. Then you won't need the list. If your heart and mind are clear and purified, you don't need the list. But in early stages of practice, or if life is difficult and we struggle, when we struggle because our struggle to make our mind and our heart pure, then we need the list to help us along the way. In one of the Buddhist sutras, talks about the monk being liberated by insight, which is another way of saying the monk spontaneously follows the precepts without having to look at a list. Spontaneously follows the precepts with his life. When we do that, when we spontaneously follow the precepts, that's the start of our practice. That's when we are free of the three poisons. And then our sitting practice, our zazen, becomes very natural. We don't struggle with posture or discomfort or a busy mind. Zazen feels so natural. When we follow the precepts spontaneously. But without morality, without a clear mind, we will run into various barriers in our zazen practice. So the third precept we can say it in two ways. One kind of negative admonition and another positive way. The third precept says no attachment to fulfillment. It's about sex. No attachment to fulfillment. Another way of saying it, in a more positive way, is remaining faithful in relationships. This is the third precept. Now, in Buddha's day, when he, or somebody in his time, came up with the ten precepts, they were written for the monks. So that precept said, no sex at all. Your monks, your celibate, no sex at all. That's the celibate life, that's the monk's life. That's what the celibates, monks, that was one of the rules they followed. But that sort of admonition is much too narrow for everyday people who don't live in monasteries. That admonition is too narrow for popular Buddhism. And it's not possible for lay people or the community to follow such a strict precept. So later it was modified. So instead of saying no sex, they said no misconduct in your sexual desires. No misconduct. It didn't prohibit sex, it just said no misconduct. Which is another way of saying don't create harm. So what does it mean, no misconduct? What does that mean? It means the original precept started with none. No sexual relationship starts with none. But that original criteria for the third precept was expanded to include people who lived a regular lay life and had a lay practice. So the point was, they wanted to include the broadest possible criteria for this precept, because the goal is relieve suffering. So it's based on compassion and a taking care attitude. So the precept about sexuality for the monks was, can it be the same for lay people? So as Buddhism became accepted more and more by the population at large, the precept had to be, modified a little bit. So this precept of no misconduct in sexual relationships, it's about taking care of each other and of the world in a number of ways. The first way is it's taking care of children, because parents raising children requires a dedicated effort to take care. And that dedicated effort has to extend for several years. Human children stay with parents a long time, many years. So parents have to be present for children for many years. And if parents don't dedicate those years to taking care of the children, there will be difficulties for the children in later life. And we spoke about this last week. So when children are involved, it requires that the couple be very committed, which includes loyalty and keeping promises to each other. So the admonition for no sex at all doesn't have to be none. It doesn't have to be that way. It should be no misconduct. Because misusing sexuality or sexual misconduct is another form of child abuse. When you're a parent, and you misuse your sexuality, that's abuse. And it has to do with the first precept, which is about no killing, or cultivating and encouraging life. The second way that this precept takes care of people is how we take care of our partner or our spouse. Sexual abuse would be abusing your wife or your husband or your partner, breaking the promise, breaking the trust, misusing sexuality. So we take care of our partner. And another way that this precept takes care, it's taking care of ourself. So when we follow the precept of no misconduct in sexuality, it means we are not being attached to our emotions. When we are attached to our emotions, we run the risk of misusing our sexuality. And this is if we have a partner or a spouse, this is selfish. And this is what an example of what the Buddhists call karma. So, the precepts that we use here, we say, no attachment to fulfillment. No attachment to striving for some kind of personal fulfillment. Because we are already fulfilled. It's when we don't feel that that we are at risk of misusing our sexuality and of breaking precepts. When we don't feel we are already fulfilled. So, when people don't take care about how they use their sexuality, if they have sex without a commitment, this may feel like a kind of fulfillment, you know. But it's always temporary. It doesn't last, and the desire never goes away. So that is not true fulfillment, that kind of casual attitude. So our practice is about how we discover our true fulfillment. That's already there. And our true fulfillment is expressed in an honest, loving relationship. And so we have the precept of remaining faithful in relationship. So if we say, oh, that third precept is about sex, that's only a surface understanding. It's more than that. It's about how we relate to each other and take care of each other. And finally, another way that this precept helps us take care is with our community, how we take care of each other. A wholesome community, like a city or a country, wholesome community needs contented children, contented spouses, and ourselves to be content. So, the fourth precept says, no telling lies. No, don't lie. It's the fourth precept. So one way to say it is, no illusory words. Don't use words to fool people. No illusory words. And another way to say it, a more positive way, is communicating truth. Don't communicate anything but the truth. No telling lies. Because when we do, we create separation. We isolate ourselves from each other when we engage in not telling the truth. And destroying relationships eventually leads to destroying the community, whether that community is a family or a village or a city or a nation. Telling lies within that context destroys the community. And creates what the Buddhists call personal karma and a dishonest life. So when we engage in illusory words, we cannot find fulfillment in our own life. But this precept of no telling lies, it's more than just deliberately lying, knowing that you're saying something wrong or falsehood. If we want to follow the fourth precept, of not speaking illusory words, we have to make our best effort to understand the truth. So it's not just we know when we're lying, but if we don't want to say something untrue or misleading, we have to make our best effort to know what we're talking about. So we have to make our best effort to understand the truth of things, which of course means pay attention and understand what's going on, so when we speak about it we can feel some confidence that we are speaking the truth. So this is included in the precept of don't tell lies. If we feel we don't fully understand the truth of something, best not to say anything. Best not to tell just part of a story if there's something that we don't understand. Because there's always the danger that we will be spreading confusion to others and to ourselves. So to say, I don't know, when somebody asks you about something that they think you know about, if you don't understand the full picture, you say, I don't know. This is part of no telling lies. If we don't make our best effort to understand the truth of things, it means we are unskilled, not skilled. If we don't make our best effort to understand the whole story about what we speak about, it means we are giving in to delusion. Knowing that part of what we're saying is, you know, confusion, if we say it anyway, it's giving in to delusion. So we instead say, I don't know. Ask me again some other time. So this is our attitude, not to move too fast. When we know that there's some work to be done, have understanding about something, patience and more work and more reflection, this is our way. Of course, there's pressure on us these days, in these times, to tell the story really fast. Somebody has no patience. Just tell me what you know. So that can be challenging if we feel we don't fully understand. We don't want to speak from misunderstanding or confusion. But we're being pressured to come up with some answer right now. That's one of our challenges these days. And how you bring your practice into that kind of environment is something you have to consider. So, to make our best effort to be skilled in speaking the truth about something, we practice. We practice sasana so that our mind can become clear. Our practice is the only way that we can communicate the truth. And this precept of no telling lies also includes no accepting lies. Don't accept lies from other people. And if we want to do that, again, we have to make our best effort to listen carefully, to make sure that we are receiving the complete truth about something. So when somebody is telling us something, that they say, this is the truth of something that I'm telling you, but we hear in their words some kind of criticism, then we know that what they're telling us includes their own personal biases and their own emotions. So how we accept or understand what they tell us, we have to consider their state of mind at the time. So no telling lies means, also includes, don't accept untruth. The fifth precept, the last one for tonight, is about, well, it sounds like it's about alcohol or drugs. It says, no selling the wine of delusion. Nice. Don't sell the wine of delusion. Another way to say it, in a positive way, is polishing clarity, dispelling delusion. So this precept really means not just about, you know, alcohol or drugs, it's about no intoxicants of any kind. Don't sell intoxicants of any kind, which is another way of talking about no delusions. Some delusions are very intoxicating. our desires for the world to be a certain way, we can delude ourselves, and that can feel very intoxicating. And this precept says, don't attach to intoxication. It means you're giving in to delusion. So, this precept is similar to the one before, the fourth precept, which emphasizes speaking the full truth of things. Delusions can be intoxicating. We sometimes purposely create delusions because they feel so good. Makes us feel good. Gives us a feeling of power. Relative to the power of other people, makes us feel power over people. But it is a false power, because it's not based on truth. It's based on delusion, or the intoxication of delusion, not based on full truth. And it creates separation. And it creates competition, personal competition. If we were to approach each other with a mind full of delusions and intoxicating ideas, and we try to influence each other with that kind of mind, we are separating ourselves from each other and competing with each other. So our practice is about understanding our inherent power. Each of us, every one of us, has exactly the same power. There is no need to delude ourselves or fill our mind with intoxicating ideas to try to gain some power. We already have all the power we need. So this precept includes, don't create delusions. And it also includes, don't be attached to delusions. So in a way, this is the most important precept. And if we can't do this one, don't create delusions. If we can't do this one, we can't do the others. So this is the Buddha's story. And the Buddha said, oh, he discovered, life is suffering. And the cause of suffering is delusions. And it became the fifth precept. All the precepts, all the other precepts are based on seeing through delusion. So Zen Master Dogen said, we practice in the midst of delusion. We practice because we are in the midst of delusion. Does anybody have any questions about these three delusions and how they manifest themselves in our life? Anybody have any questions? I think it varies. It varies according to the situation. And what was said and who's involved and how vital it is. Sometimes we say nothing. Leave it alone. But if we feel there is some harm being created, and we feel compelled to prevent the suffering, then we might have to say something or divert the conversation in another direction, or there's many, many things we can do. It just depends on what's going on. Yes, Anna.
Thank you for that talk. How do we cultivate honesty with a person or even within a system that doesn't value honesty in the same way?
Courage. You have to start there. You have to be willing to be honest. If when you feel you're in an environment that's not so honest, you have to have the courage to do it. And sometimes it's very lonely. But that's, if we want to live an authentic life, we have to be true to ourselves. So just have some determination and courage. Stay honest. Thank you. Yes, please.
I can appreciate what you mean by the fact that the precepts are fluid or living, in the sense that it seems like all of the wordings that I heard tonight were different than I'd heard in other contexts. For example, the third precept of not being attached to fulfillment seems like a very, you know, creative or different way of looking at that. It made me think that it was almost the description of not being codependent, or somehow putting so much reliance on another person. And it kind of hit me in a world where it seems like maybe we used to have more of a village or a tribe, and now we kind of have this one primary relationship that has sort of become our village or tribe. And that this idea of not kind of putting everything and all our expectations on that other person fulfilling us. If I heard that right, I'm wondering if I did.
I think it means more. The precept says don't misuse sexuality, but it really means don't misuse the other person. I think it's a personal thing, not just some bumper sticker thing. So when we rely too much on one person for our personal fulfillment, like you say, too dependent, then we are misusing them, and it creates hardship, like you say. So we are at risk of, we become at the risk of doing that when we don't recognize our inherent fulfillment. This is the point of why we practice. But thank you, that's a nice question. Oh, yes, please.
So, do you have any thoughts on telling a lie with good intentions and telling the truth with bad intentions?
Sometimes we have to do that. If our vision is to prevent suffering or to relieve suffering, sometimes we won't tell the truth to somebody if it will prevent suffering. So those are very tricky situations. We have to be very mindful when we find ourselves in those situations. Thank you. Yes, Travis.
I have two questions. The first is, could you give any further advice on how to be skillfully speculative? And the second question is, do you think we evolved to be deluded? That is to say, was it in our gene survival to be deluded, and is to not be to work to be to work to go beyond deluded? Is that the effort? Is it a question of rising beyond something that might be base or more of a default behavior?
So the first question was
skillful speculation.
Skillful speculation.
Right. So if you're in an activity where you have to work with less than perfect information, and you have to be honest at the same time, but you have to be creative. You have to say, "I think we should do this." Any advice on how to be skillful in those situations?
I think you're talking about a kind of problem solving. I think the only thing to say about that is to have a clear mind. Have a clear mind so that we can speculate on the possible words or actions that we can take. Without a clear mind, then speculation will probably go wrong. So we try to stay clear. And the second question has to do with our default setting regarding delusion.
Yeah, I was thinking about whether we have delusions, like the strongest delusions may have persisted because, for example, sexual misconduct may have in the past been productive to bring our genes forward into the next generation. And so my question is, do you think that this is how we're programmed? And I know that's more of a modern way to phrase it, but like to move beyond the default setting requires the work of getting beyond something that's persistent, but is persistent because it was sort of hardwired.
I don't think it's hardwired. It may feel like it because it's so strong. I think it goes back to intention. If we really care about relationships, if we care about not creating suffering, then we will always look for the root that does that. So even though the tendency towards delusion may be very strong, and it says, we say, oh, it's hardwired, if our intention of not creating harm can be strong, then we won't allow ourselves to be deluded. So it comes back to our intention, comes back to our practice, and how we feel we want to live our life. I don't believe any of these harmful habits are hardwired. They can all be dealt with. We don't have to be a slave to them. Thank you. Am I doing this right? That's good. Yes, please.
Thank you for the talk. I might be a bit circuitous. My understanding of cause. My understanding of cause and effect is the understanding was it was a bit cyclical, that it goes from and we would like to move from a vicious cycle to a virtuous cycle.
Mm.
And to do that, we need to purify our intentions.
Mm.
And the precepts that you mentioned, contentment, no lying, no being self-deluded, or the wine of delusion, or no self-delusion. I guess I was hearing echoes of a question that was forming in my mind, which is, I feel the default for a lot of people is to want a family, and to start a family, and people feel content when they have that nearby, and sometimes it is elusive. Is that the delusion of wanting a family?
No, I think that's very fundamental in human nature to want to carry on. I don't think it's a delusion. It's an interesting point. In our culture, some of you might say, oh, if having a family is a good thing, then I want more than one. And everybody says, but in other cultures, that may be accepted. So it's relative to what we think is beneficial for everybody. But I think to want to have a family is fundamental. It's a fundamental need. Fundamental part of our being here in the world. Thank you. Yes, please.
So you mentioned the three poisons. I was wondering if some of the poisons are worse than the others. Like it's like greed is worse than delusion. Hatred is pretty much worse than greed. But so I mean, from a practical point of view, if you have, you know, if you have energy to only work on one at a time, can you work on hatred first and then greed and then delusion?
No. We work on all three at the same time. You know, we don't want to say, it's okay for me to be angry today because I'm working on delusion. The other way.
So, basically, work on hatred first. And it's okay to be a little greedy, but work on hatred first and not be angry and hurting people.
I don't think they can be separated like that. I think if we put our energy to any one of them, we're working on all three at the same time.